Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Yes, I do always sound surprised when I say that. Perhaps I am. I am surprised to be me. And I'm surprised that you're you. How did those miracles happen? How do we keep them happening? Is there anything we can do to keep them happening? Who are we? Who are you? What is the answer to everything? Give me a second. I'll go look it up. Who am I? Who wrote the autobiography in my head? I have collected information about myself from others to assemble this picture of who I am, but it's all from their perspective. I have no view of myself since my eyes are in my own head. All the ideas of who I am come from people around me who I trust to be honest mirrors. But even the best mirrors are full of distortions. Where did this table come from?
The truck? The store? The factory? Wood? The trees? The earth? The heavier elements in the universe? Big Bang?
I want to say Wanamaker's. I don't think so. I worked at Wanamaker's for 80 years. Well, not in a row, but thanks to the time machine, I played organ there in their Philadelphia store. What a grand place. A cathedral of retail. We were a family, too. Free health care. Esprit de corps. John Wanamaker invented the price tag.
I did not know that.
Imagine walking into the first floor and looking up many stories high, all the floors wrapped around like an ancient library, the wonderful smells of new things and perfume in the air, the sounds of organ music and the echo of bustling shoppers. Wanamaker's was my sacred space. Pretty sure it came from there.
No, you know, I think we got this years ago when the neighbor died.
Oh, now I remember. This will be our house, and we will live our lives here together in love. And we will grow old together. Then, one of us will die, and the other will live on here alone in a museum of grief.
Hello?
She's gonna die.
I'm sorry?
She's gonna die.
Oh, you mean Miss Thornton?
She's gonna die. She's too cheap for a heart operation. Just like she's too cheap to fix up them rental duplexes of hers. She had me go over there to clean one, and the woman living there had too many cats, and they'd filthed everywhere and ruined them hardwood floors. I told her she needed to refinish them, but she's too cheap, and now she's gonna die.
Well, that's sad news.
I've worked for her for 40 years after I come back from the war.
Oh, this neighborhood's been around a long time.
I came back from the war, and I knew how to fix motorcycles, and so that's what I done. I had one in the war, too. They used to send me off to pick up potatoes, which is what I did because I knew how to fix a motorcycle.
All right, that's a good skill.
I was coming back on a road in Germany one time, and I seen a German's parachute on the ground and knowed he's in this barn. So I took a sub-Thompson machine gun.
Isn't it called?
I took a sub-Thompson machine gun and yelled, Deutscher Soldat aus! Deutscher Soldat aus! And he come out of that barn with his hands up, and I motioned for him to climb on the back of that motorcycle. And I brought a German soldier and a sack of potatoes back into town.
Well, how about that?
But now she's gonna die.
Well, you know, all right. Well, okay, you have a good one.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm June Breath from the Brown Group. I'm in charge of the estate sale of your neighbor, Mrs. Thornton, and the sale is tomorrow, but I'd like to give her friends and neighbors a chance to come by today and have a first look at anything they might want.
We didn't really know her.
Sure we did. And we loved her, too.
Thanks so much. We'll be over to look around.
All right. See you soon.
We get to look at dead old lady possessions. I'm over the moon.
Why are you so happy?
Well, she might have antiques and all. I bet we could really score.
Well, let's just be respectful.
She was mean.
Well, who knows what she was going through?
Obviously, she didn't feel well since she died.
Let's just go look around. We do need a dining room table.
Hey,
Look at this. Some cup thing with a handle.
I think that's for making Turkish coffee.
Or maybe it's for scooping out a chamber pot.
Well, which is it? Because that'll make all the difference in the world as to whether I want it.
Take a little whiff. That'll tell you.
No.
Smell it.
You smell it.
You smell it.
You smell it.
You smell it.
Can I help you?
Yeah, what is this?
It's a Turkish coffee pot.
I told you.
Is it literally for coffee, or is that some euphemism for a chamber pot scoop?
It's for coffee, I believe. Not sure if it was ever used.
She probably got it as a gift and figured, I don't even have a chamber pot.
Can you tell me about this piece of furniture?
That's a desk.
Right, I mean, is it a special kind of desk?
It's just a desk.
But there's shelves on the side.
It's a desk.
All right. Man, this carpet is crazy. I've heard of shag, but this is like walking in marsh grass.
That was the style back then.
It also preserves 50 years of cooking pork chop smells.
It's an odor diary.
Ooh, guys, look at this table.
That's a Haywood Wakefield.
Oh, we had that at Wanamaker's.
Wanamaker's? I used to work at Strawbridge's years ago.
Oh, good for you.
Well, we need a table. How much is it?
Well, since you knew Miss Thornton...
We didn't really.
Shut up! Yes, we did. We called her Aunt, and then her first name.
Let's say 200.
200? It's worth way more than that.
Sold!
Excellent.
Pay the lady, Hardy.
I got it. Can I write a check?
I don't know. Can you?
I love this lady.
Of course.
It's going to be nice having a proper table to have our coffee at in the morning.
Also, it's going to be nice to have a memento to remember Mrs. What's-her-name by.
And that's the story of our table.
There once was a table. It was born in a furniture factory, as are many tables, except the ones born at home, and very few people made their own tables anymore. Its first home was a warehouse. Many people think that tables all start out their lives on the showroom floor. Not true. In fact, most who do live their lives on the showroom floor never find a home of their own. Its legs weren't even attached yet, but lie next to it in a crate a little wider than its top. It still remembered its first spray of varnish, but it couldn't remember as far back as being lumber.
I have a table for Mrs. Thornton Thornton.
Put it over there.
We have to uncrate it and attach the legs.
Then what are you waiting for?
This is a very nice table. Well made. Yep, fine table you have here.
It'll do.
Well, there you go. Legs are on, and the chair should be delivered tomorrow. Again, nice table.
It's average, 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 average.
The word repeated in the table's mind. Average. Its first owner, and they thought it was just average. It began to worry about what this stern woman might put on it. Will she scratch the finish because the table has no value to her? Or will she rub it gently with lemon oil and admonish children who don't use a coaster?
Table. This is your life. We've assembled a group of people from your past who have memories about you, and they're going to tell your story. So let's hear the first voice.
Our first meeting was interesting because I wrote a check on it. In fact, I remember bearing down so hard that I later noticed I'd etched the check amount into its top. $200 and no cents.
That voice sound familiar? It's Lou Register, your second owner.
Hey, table. Looking good.
Let's hear another voice from your past.
It's Butchie. I'm walking out now.
Oh, okay.
Hey, table. You hold a mean cup of coffee still on your back.
It's called a top. Ever hear of a thing called a table back?
Well, there's a bar back.
Different. Like it out here in the rain, table? Because that is where you're gonna stay! Because you're worthless, you hear me? Worthless! With that broken leg of yours,
Your little topple yesterday caused my prized vase to crash to the floor. So see how you like it outside, where I'll be cutting fish open on you without cleaning you afterwards until the weather splits your planks and you collapse in a heap of table bones.
I sure do miss our table, Ma. I know, Billy, but I'm sure whoever has our table now loves it as much as we do.
I hope so, but I'm worried. It's a Haywood Wakefield. That's a good table. Will they know what they've got? Will they use a coaster?
I know, Dad. I worry, too. And that one bad leg.
It's not a bad leg. You just have to keep the bolt tightened. It's got a tendency to come loose and make it wobble.
What if they don't know that? What if they just think it's a bad table and throw it away? Let's have faith, Billy.
I love working at Wanamaker's. Man, do I love working at Wanamaker's.
No, I think I liked it the first time with the ever. Leave the ever and, in fact, emphasize the ever.
Man, do I ever love working at Wanamaker's. There's so many ways you could say it. How am I supposed to say it? Man!
All right, no, you're doing good. Now, why don't you try, like, you're answering your own question. You're asking a question, but you're also answering it.
Do I ever love working at Wanamaker's? Yes. Do I love working at Wanamaker's? Yes. Man, do I ever love working at Wanamaker's? I've forgotten, because I've lost my Wanamaker memory.
I dreamed I was a table. Incapable of independent movement or motivation. And though I could not think, I knew I was a table because I was consistently treated like one. I then came to the conclusion others were writing my autobiography for me. I became determined to see myself the way I really was. I tried to imagine I was not a table, but found I could not. The world is the only lens I have. I can only look through the eyes of others. I was now a table, and that could only be added on to, but not undone. Butchie, I got your lunch.
When I awoke one morning from uneasy dreams, I found I had transformed in my bed into a table. My four legs stuck up in the air, and I looked up, and you say you looked up with what eyes, table? Oh, you got me. I'm lying. I don't feel like lying right now because I don't want to use my imagination, because I used it yesterday, and I ended up straining it. A lot of people think it's spraining it. It's not. It's strain. You strain your imagination if you use it wrong. And what did you get? Well, I ended up separating the imagination juice from the imagination pulp, and what did you make? I made imagination pulp balls, like I always do, and they're useless. It's the juice that you want, but the juice goes through you. It's like when you make juice out of vegetables or anything. You think, well, that pulp is good, too. What's that for? Well, that is the stuff of turds. That is what they call dietary fiber, and you have to have something that goes through there. It's like when you clean your saxophone out, you use a rag and you pull it through like that. Well, that's what pulp does to you. Not just the kind from vegetables, but the fictional kind as well. Oh, my friends, I'm so glad that you are with me. I am sitting today at a table, and I am often sitting at a table. And the table is my silent partner and doesn't get near enough credit. Table shows up every show, doesn't say anything, but table is my support. Oh, this is going to get cute and I'm going to slap myself. Table is always there, but I've been cheating table out of its side of the profits anyway. I've had it. You know what it is? It's not that table isn't talented. It's that table knows it's talented. You know what I'm saying? It's arrogant about it. And that violates my sense of justice. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just look out for myself.
And this table can look out for itself, too. And when I met it, it didn't have all these rings on it. Now it's got rings in there, I don't know, into the wax and everything. It needs to be refinished, and it won't do it. It won't do it. But who wants to be scraped down like that? Who wants that? Some people go to plastic surgeons, and they get Homer Formby to strip away a layer of their old shellac, and it renews them, and that's good for them. And then they get repainted because they say, well, in the 70s, what happened is I fell in for the antiquing craze, and I painted this valuable antique Muscadin cabinet. What's a Muscadin cabinet? I just made that up, but I'm sure it'll exist now because sometimes you can retroactively create, especially if you have a time machine. I have to be careful, but then I can go back and make anything I need. It's a very wonderful thing. I was lacking in a certain spoon in my decorative spoon collection because I have a rack and I inherited it, and there was one extra space, right? When I was missing a spoon. I thought, what is this, a spoon to a world's fair? And I had no idea what spoon was missing because I didn't have it and I'd never had it. So I had to go back in the past and go to some world's fair in the 30s. I wasn't even interested. I had a headache. You'd think it would be so exciting to have a time machine and go back in the past. But what if you got a splitting migraine every time you did it? So you're like, oh, I'm back in the past. But really, I can't stop thinking about the pain in my head. Blah, blah, blah. Hi, Mark Twain. Blah, blah, blah. That's not even somebody I want to see. But it would be marred, just like a table is marred. Do you ever, first time you heard the expression scratch and dent, didn't you wonder what that was? So there's a scratch and dent sale. I wonder why. No dent. Is that not Latin for tooth? So something to do with teeth and nail, right? So maybe you fight other people for the items. I don't know. And then I found out it was items that are considered to be marred or have something on them that would make their value a little less, not value less. So if you scratched a component of a stereo, like, oh, this receiver has a scratch on it, I can't sell it for $599.99, but I can sell it for $420. Okay, $420, I think it's a sign from God, I'm going to buy it. And it's perfectly fine, it has that scratch on it, and I just went ahead and put a Tibetan prayer cloth over it, and you can't even tell. And look at that, it's fine now, it works great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the inside. A lot of us are scratch and dented, aren't we? And we want to say to the world, hey, I might not be able to get full price for this thing, but the inside, the components are sound. Well, maybe not entirely sound. Hey, maybe I'm a fixer-upper. Maybe I'm something that you'd take to the, whatever, the thrift shop, right? They're going to resell it for charity or something. You take it there, and there's a fella in the back, an old retired fella who's fixing up those old toasters. That was actually my uncle. So my uncle volunteered at a hospital thrift shop to fix small appliances that people would donate, because they donate things like broken toasters or slightly broken electric can openers. So my uncle volunteered to fix these things, but in fact, he stole them all. He would just go in there and people would donate a toaster. He'd take it home and he'd just leave it home. He'd go, oh, I'll fix it. And he took everything. He took all the small things that could be fixed and he just took them home. And I know that's not what they imagined. They thought he'd be fixing them and putting them back. But I don't know. And then I wonder after his death what happened to them. I guess they put them right back in that store. They were just temporarily with them. Yes, those broken toasters that my uncle hoarded are like memories. We have them for a little while, and we believe they're ours, but they're not ours. They belong to the hospital thrift shop. And they go right back in there after we're gone. Not all of them. Not all of them. Some of them fade away. But I have a lot of my ancestors' memories in me because they told me things about themselves, and I remembered that. So that little bit of themselves, of their autobiography, I got. And I think my whole vision of them is just their memories, but that's not them. So my grandmother isn't some car accident she had on the way to her kindergarten teaching job, right? But that's one of her memories and how she sees herself. That's part of her autobiography. She would mention it. Now I mention it. Now I have it. And then my memories I might pass on to somebody. I'm passing them on to you, and you might remember my memories. and I'll take some of them with me because they're disgusting, but other ones I put right out there, and we share them. How about that? Who am I? I don't know. I look in the mirror, and I know that's not me because the mirror gets some things backwards. You said mirror, and then mirror. I know, because I don't know how to pronounce it. Isn't that one of those words, mirror? Tomorrow. I don't even, tomorrow or tomorrow? I slur over those words because even though I'm a so-called native speaker, and who is? I didn't come out of the womb speaking this. I came out of the womb speaking the universal human language. A scream, the loudest scream that I could manage. I drew air into my lungs for the first time, and my reaction to air was to expel it as quickly as possible while constricting my throat and squinching my face up in anger. Ah, what is this stuff in me? Where is my amniotic fluid? I was soaking in it. And I long to soak in it again, do I not? Perhaps that's what death is. I hope I enjoy my death. I hope I go quietly into it with some fancy messed up memory, lingering as the last thing, like a smell that fades away as you walk slowly away from the tea olive or the lavender or whatever that was tempting your nose. Goodbye. And go away quietly like that. It's one thing that's all going to happen to all of us, and I think we're living our lives for it, for the end. Because you want to say, well, here's the end. Let's sum it up. Ooh, I was a pop star. How about that? And you can only have that thought at the end if you did that thing. Or if you're crazy and you thought that happened. But either way, isn't that beautiful? You can circumvent it. I don't have to live a life. I'll just go mad at the end and think I was a ship's captain. That just popped out. I didn't know I wanted to be a ship's captain. I know I don't. I know I'm slightly claustrophobic. I don't like to be trapped anywhere by obligation or space. I like to be able to roam free. I like to be able to run around. I guess because I'm a terrified person. I'm like an animal, a small animal. They don't like to be cooped up either. It makes them crazy. So I got to get out of here. I have to have an escape route. Even if we go to a restaurant together. I go, no, not that table. How am I going to get out? How am I going to get out of here at that table? No, 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 no. I want one with some kind of quick egress. And that's my name. That's my inner name that I say to my quick exit. That's me. Get me out of here. Feet, you have failed me in the past, often because I have slept on you funny and you went numb. But you've never really not done what I've asked you to do. I've asked you to go faster in the race, but I think that's legs. I don't think that's feet. Feet are like, we're here. We showed up. It's legs that are going, no, let's rest. But the feet are willing. Isn't that funny? All the ends of me, when my head and my feet are willing, it's everything in between that's going, hold on now, let's talk it through. I don't want to. Let's just go. Let's do it. I'm not the adventurous sort. I am sort of a human table. I don't let people put things on me, so maybe I'm more like a mule. Or what's the other one? What's the other one? Yes, you are in fact an ass. Ah, well, I hope I'm like Balaam's ass. Explain. I'm not going to do a Bible lesson right now. I'm not scheduled for one. Also, I think I want to start being paid to tell lies. That's a little side hustle I'm going to do. I don't know. I haven't figured it out exactly, but I see it's very lucrative. So I'll lie to you. I have a vivid imagination. I could lie to you all day long. Just keep throwing quarters at me. If you threw me a quarter a lie, I'd still end up being a billionaire. Oh, I don't know if anything I say is true. I imagine it is. But once I started caring whether I was right or wrong or important or anything, oh, the whole world opened up to me. Oh, yes, now there are no walls holding me back if I want to sprint out in a certain direction. I can do it. Oh, my friends, what if the tabletop was a kingdom? People build small towns on tables. They'll get a table, and then they'll put a whole town, usually put a railroad as an excuse. They say, oh, it's a toy train. Go, you know what? I bet that toy train is just an excuse to make a little village. You don't care whether there's a train in it or not. Come on. Dispense with that pretense. Just go down in your basement and make a small village and spend all day painting little trees and things like that, planting them tiny. Look at that. That's a little
pharmacy down there. If you look carefully, with a jeweler's loop, you will see that I've actually painted things in the apothecary, little apothecary glass vial things. Can you see?
Not really.
Well, you need a lot of times maybe something more powerful, like some kind of electron scanning microscope or something. Can you see it now? Oh, yes. And it's populated by water bears or something. Isn't that clever? Oh, you have created a whole world. And you are the master, the god of that world. You're more like a Greek god or something than the sort of nebulous creator god, right? Yeah, because I wear togas and all.
I do too.
You know, they're just, the older I get, comfort is more important. And so dressing like Hermes or something, it just feels right to me. I don't know, and I carry around my Caduceus also. Not real snakes. I'm scared to death. I don't hate them. Oh, my word, I hate no creature. But there are creatures I think, I don't know how well we're going to read each other's intentions. And you are deadly. I know I'm deadly, too. So let's stay away from each other, because I could hit you with a shovel unjustly, or you could bite my ankle unjustly, simply because we can't communicate. So let's just agree that we keep our distance a bit, Mr. Snake.
Surely.
Yes, they all sound like that. Like Sterling Holloway, don't they? All snakes. Isn't it funny? The snake in Jungle Book and Winnie the Pooh are Sterling Holloway, right? And how can that be the same thing? I feel like I thought when I was little, I think that snake ate Winnie. Maybe that's why he's talking like that.
Help, I'm in here.
Okay, ooh. Because snakes don't normally talk. But do toy bears? I don't know if is it clear he's a toy? I don't even know. The fiction, I don't question it. I don't say, that's not realistic. How do I know what's realistic? How do I know what's real? I've taken philosophy classes and sociology classes and science. I've taken history, blah, math, physics. What is that? I didn't take physics. Biology, pharmacology. Philosophy. I said that one. Metaphysics is a lie. I don't know. I've taken a lot of classes. Meteorology. Just a simple one. I'm not a meteorologist. We just learned like stratocumulus, cumulofricative, which is one. And I learned a little bit in those classes. I let them expand my mind. You don't have to. You can keep a tight metal band on your mind and disallow it to be expanded. And then it might still grow, but it'll grow around that metal band the way a tree does if you put one of those guy wire things on it, even if you put the rubber hose over it where it touches the bark. Still, if that guy wire is on beyond its usefulness, the tree will grow around it. It will see that restriction as a sort of injury, and it will fold itself over onto it until the guy wire is consumed by the tree, inside the tree, and that thing that once inflicted injury becomes the tree, inseparable, wedded to it for the life of the tree. When people see us and they define us, that goes into us. We soak it in. We absorb it as if we're some sort of creature that absorbs things from the area that it's in. Am I being specific enough? No, like a sponge. I recently marinated tempeh and I was appalled how quickly the tempeh absorbed the marinade. And I had a talk with the tempeh. I said, hey, slow down. Careful of all these things that you take into yourself. I put an awful lot of oil in there, and you've just absorbed it as if it were nothing. And then I thought perhaps we should be dumping tempeh on big oil spills. Then who's going to eat it, though? That's a waste. But there's so many soybeans. Aren't we lousy with soybeans? That's a wonderful crop. I'm not sure if it gives you stomach cancer, but hey, what doesn't? Well, there's probably a long list of things, and I don't know them because I'm not a scientist, because I didn't take any science classes. Yes, I did. We didn't cover that. Perhaps no science class covers everything that we need.
No philosophy class. No class that teaches us logic. No class that teaches us imagination. No poetry instructor can tell us what we're going to need to make a certain vegetarian sandwich. Can they?
I think they can because there is such a thing as a recipe poem. I learned this.
Take one part love, two parts patience.
You can do things like that. And it's the form of recipe.
This is always a poem. He's not talking about a literal loaf of anything. He's talking about some sort of life loaf that you can make with the ingredients of love and patience and everything like that. Yes, he is. And he's making it a poem because what form of communication do most of us, most common people, express ourselves in but the poem? You go to work and a coworker comes up to you and they say to you, I got to tell you what I did this weekend. I am compelled. I went forth from the house, and they go on in very poetic terms about what they did, and it involved going fishing. I had a PE teacher in high school, and one day it was raining, and he took us all in a room and read us a poem about bass fishing. And I thought, this too is sports. And this is now, coach, you are speaking my sport language, my sport lingo. Not fishing, though, just the poem. That's funny. So I don't know. Oh, you like rods too? I don't use them to fish. What do I do with them? I whip them through the air to make that whoosh, 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 whoosh. Okay, that's some sort of foley. I'm going to use that for something. Give me a tape recorder. I'm going to record it. As a child, I was always recording things. Even before I had a tape recorder, I was using my memory, and which is don't use that. It's hard. And then you've got, when you play it back, you've got it. And this is what he sounded like to me.
All right, you guys, you dirty rats.
And you have to do impressions of everything that you've heard. And that's difficult. It maybe got me in the habit of doing that. So you could go to the mechanics and say, what sound is the car making? And go, oh, I'll do the sound to you. This is what the sound it makes. Check oil. Check oil. Check oil. That was in the future, though. It's a lot easier then. Then in the past, you had to go, oh, you need to check the oil. But nowadays, it literally is your car speaks to you. I get in my car, a very modern car. I get into it, and the car will sometimes say, let's not today. Let's not drive. I'm not feeling it. I go, thank you. Thanks for the heads up. Because what if I had forced that car out onto the road when it just wasn't into it? The car has to be present at every moment to keep going, doesn't it? Unless the car's brain also works like ours and there's an autonomic nervous system. I almost said autonomic because auto, I think auto has to be there. It doesn't. The car might work like that too. Its consciousness might be separate from the thing that keeps it breathing. Does your car breathe? Try clogging the air filter and then tell me that you don't know the answer to that question. After that experiment that I've just asked you to do with the air filter as a way of determining whether it's breathing or not. Will you? My friends, I don't know why that you have tuned into the show. Have you turned into the show? That's a sort of metamorphosis. You have tuned into the show. Perhaps not on a spiritual level. Say, I'm not quite tuned into the show. I'm here, but I don't know what you're saying. I'm drifting. It's as if I was sitting at a high school awards ceremony. I'm conscious of the fact that I'm here, but I'm really, all the names are blending together. I really have no idea what name we're on or what category. I just see people coming and going from the stage. I see presenters getting up and saying, the history of the farm beer insurance is a long one. For years, we have supported public education through our endeavors and various tractor shows, and today I am very honored to present the scholarship for the best child that had performed in school but is destined to be a farmer, perhaps a very small subsistence farmer. And why do we encourage that in the insurance business? Well, I imagine smaller claims. For if the crops of a small farmer fail, it is a smaller payout for us. We offer to help, but we pray that that offer is never collected upon, because then we would lose some of our profit, and I would have to give up my luxury.
I would have to give up my privilege if I were to help you in the way I said I was. So I want to prevent you from needing help. And to do that, I must give you a check. This check is for $300. We're sorry. We know that that's not much of a scholarship. We're calling it a scholarship. And I suspect it'll buy like 2 textbooks, depending on what classes you take. But we feel like it's good for the business. I get up here, it's free advertising in a way, because all of you parents and family that are here to see a child be awarded an award are being subjected to an advertisement. And there might not be anything wrong with that. We are all sort of businesses, and we cannot be blind to the fact that the public is going to see us in a certain way, if it's true or not. If it's true or not, it doesn't matter. Businesses understand that. They say it's all about perception. There's nothing about our cheese-coated chip that is really going to make it extreme. There's nothing that's going to cause you to climb mountains or start taking some sort of kayaking lessons because there's zesty cheese dust upon your snack. But there are things that we can do to create that impression, because we know people put things on us, so let's put them on ourselves and use that to manipulate them. No, that's not a good message. I'll think about that. I don't have a specific message. I was at a wedding one time, and in walked a man or a woman in a gorilla suit. It also could have been a gorilla in a gorilla suit for all I know, because it was wearing a gorilla suit. But I suspect that it was a college age man or woman or whatever. I think the gender doesn't matter. It was an individual, it was a human being. And they walked into this wedding because they had for the groom a gorillagram. And the gorillagram was from an uncle. And because this was the wedding of a relative of mine, it was an uncle that we shared. It was the same uncle that would steal the appliances from the hospital thrift shop. And that uncle had sent this gorillagram, and the gorilla began to dance a little dance or something, and then read this note that said, "I wish I could be there for your wedding. Good luck to you. Love, Uncle Jack." I don't think that's giving him away. If I just say Uncle Jack, you know, oh, we're going to prosecute. He's long dead. Uncle Jack is long dead, and he no longer can steal small appliances from that hospital thrift shop. But he lives in my memory doing that all the time. Oh, I love him. I never faulted him for that. He was a lovable, blustery fellow who told great embellished stories of his own fighting prowess. He was proud. And so I indulged that, because I saw something of a young child in his face, even as an old man. And I thought, oh, you are battling all the stories that were told about you by those who surrounded you when you were young, like your parents and older humans, and they made up stories about you. And that's how you saw yourself. And so, even till now, you still think those things, and you say things to combat it. Say, hey, I'm not a weakling. I can stick up for myself. I am good in fights. I am bright, all right. And man, am I okay. I'll tell the world that I went to war, that I took a sub-Thompson machine gun, and that I captured a German soldier single-handedly. Hey, I don't mean to interrupt and contradict you, my good friend, but I think that Air Force pilots might be easier to capture. They have a pistol. But they're not going to use it. They know they're alone. They know, okay. And if the Great Escape or whatever it's called. No, what's it called? Not Great Escape. That's a different war movie. They escape in it, but it's not called that. It's the Jean Renoir one. I'm forgetting what it's called. But the war one, they get the pilots get really wonderful treatment. They capture these pilots, the Germans do, and they go, come on, let's have some food. I believe it's World War One. They go, let's have...
Let's have a meal together, much more civilized. Oh, my friends, if we were to have a meal together, where would we have it? So go ahead, it's your house. No, that's what I'm saying. My house? No, that's not what I'm saying. A restaurant? Think more specific. Kitchen? Closer. Table. Table, right. That's what we're talking about. Are we talking about tables? And we call it a table. Now, the table, let me give you some background on tables. Anything's a table. My grandfather said that. He said, anything is a table. And anything is ham. And I go, oh, why'd you keep going? You were right at anything. You ruined it. I believe anything is a table. I can imagine that. You could prop something up as long as it'll hold something up. Yes, I could put my plate on this. It's sort of anything is a table. Not everything is a ham. That's very specific. Now I'm not sure if the first thing was right. Now I'm doubting it because you made a mistake afterwards. Oh, the good and the bad are mixed together. How do you get them separate? The stories that you want told about you and the ones that are, they're all mixed up together. How do I accept the truth of others' opinions of me if I don't want to accept the truth of others' opinions of me? I mean, can I really call out the bad stuff? Yes, all those criticisms are wrong and all the praise is correct. Either it's all wrong or it's all right. No, that's not true either. Some things are right, some things are wrong, and you may never understand which is which. But, ooh, eschew absolutes. That's my motto. It doesn't have to be yours, but I eschew absolutes. I don't like to make broad statements. Every time I say something that seems all-encompassing, every time I come up with a theory, every time I come up with an aphorism, I can think of an exception. And I want to blurt that out, too. That's why a lot of times I'll say, no, but no, not really. Things change. Things are true one moment and not true the next. Aren't they? You can say the answer to one across down, the answer to one down on the crossword puzzle is Nora. And you say, I'm looking at it since six letters. So, oh, I mean yesterday's. You didn't say yesterday's. And what I call crossword puzzle is the one I have today. So unless you make the distinction, I don't know which day you're referring to. Oh, my friend, come here. Come here, you're okay. You're all right. I'm not saying you're all right, you're not in danger. I mean, to me, you're fine. You're fine the way I love you, because I'm ignorant. I don't know. You look fine to me. Come here. Everybody deserves love. I don't want to look too closely, because then my own brain will get in the way, and I might find some reason to deprive you of it or to think that you should be deprived of it. So I don't know, that table is so arrogant, the way it relentlessly holds things up, and it knows it. Therefore, I'm going to abuse it. I'm going to mar it. I'm going to let the rings of glasses form a design on it. And not even a symmetrical design. Something willy-nilly. Something, if it were tattooed on a person, you'd say, were you drunk? What is that? Was that, it looks as if the Olympic logo exploded. I know. Doesn't mean a thing. It's just glass rings and scratches. Look, you wrote a check on that tabletop and you didn't put anything under it. And now I can read what you wrote on the check because you've inadvertently etched it into the finish of the table. I had a fine piece of antique one time. I got it from the neighbor lady died. And we were allowed to go over and look through her things and buy anything. It's called an estate sale. That was her estate. Oh, a grand estate it was. It looked like a little house in a humble neighborhood from the 1930s. That's what you originally, no, 1950s. It was a 50s, 40s neighborhood. And she had one of these houses that had vinyl siding. I don't even know what was under it anymore, but it had somebody had come to her house and said, you need vinyl siding. And she went, all right, bet it on. And they had. And this was her grand, what we call an estate. And it was just her junk that she had accumulated over the years in her house with horrible dated shag carpeting. And I only say horrible because, oh, it's got a life, right? Because it's really the canvas under the carpet that you can't see. When you've ever pulled up carpeting at a house, say, oh, this beautiful hardwood floor is under here. You would look at the carpet and you say, I wonder what that is. That stain. It's almost like tie-dye, except it's made of iced tea and cat urine. And you say, well, I'm getting it. Then you put it at the curb. You roll up the old carpet that you've taken out, and you put it at the curb. And trash day goes by, and it's still there, and you're thinking, what is going on? Then you realize that the trash service refuses, will not pick up carpet. You say, why? Because it's horrible. It doesn't ever break down. It's just going to be in the landfill forever. Isn't there anything you can do with it? No, I don't know what to do with it. So to this day, you'll see people just have it out front. After about a month, they figure it out that what they need to do is cut it smaller and put it in bags and disguise it. And then they'll get, don't do that, though. I don't know the proper way. I think you're supposed to take your old carpet and give it to, like, a punk band to soundproof their practice space. And then they put it on the walls, and they go, what is that odor? You know, it doesn't matter. It was free. All right, go. 1, 2, 3, 4. No, that's terrible. That's not what it sounds like. That's not even punk. I know. I didn't mean to mock. I feel so bad now. I love your music. I love a lot of music. I love almost every genre. There's very little I don't like. I don't hate anything. Music has never brought up that emotion in me. Hate. And I have Tammy Faye Baker's album. I go, oh, that's not bad. Bless her heart. That doesn't sound terrible. So I'll listen to anything. And music is music. That's not true. Some music is transcendently wonderful and brilliant. And others is, hey, that's pleasant. I know that it irritates. Some people are very passionate about things, like architecture or something. I can't even look at that building. Its form is an insult to my senses. I cannot listen to this song. It is torture. Oh, I'm so sorry. You realize that pee is under almost 50 mattresses. And you can still feel it. What a sensitive soul you are. I'm halfway between those people who go, what do you hear? It's music. Do you know what kind of music it is? No, music, some sort of music or something. To those who have opinions about different kinds of music and everything. I hear music in a lot of places, though, that aren't necessarily musical. Like a symphony or if someone's playing a viola, I can hear them. I can actually hear them. I can hear the music. A lot of people say that's not possible. It is. You just have to open your mind and expand your definition of music. So I have done that, and I've expanded my definition of a lot of things. In fact, I have expanded my definition of so many things so widely that words don't have any meaning anymore. Like the word word. I use that for everything from beans to basketballs. I have no idea what I'm speaking about anymore. Its definition is so broad. It's a big tent. Come on under this big tent. I've made a tent so large that it's encompassed the entire world, and I have accidentally blotted out the sun because instead of a tent, and because of the curvature of the globe, I have made a bag. And I have put the entire world inside a bag, a giant crown royal velvet bag with a golden drawstring at the top, at the Arctic, at the axis on which we revolve around, like a ballet dancer spinning, or a skater, or a record player, around and around, or a ride at the fair, or many other things that go around, that spin around in all directions, a frisbee, except still. So more like a plate spinning on a stick on the Merv Griffin show in the 70s, on stage, for you. That's how I feel. You can write that down. I do write it down, Hardy. Every week I'll write it down. I go, I got to go back and read this. I have no idea what he's saying. Oh, I didn't mean to make it impenetrable. No. I needed to make it just hard enough to get in that you would move on to the next show. That's the way that security works in the suburbs. Say, no suburban house is impenetrable. You just make it hard enough for the burglar that they move on to your neighbor. Go rob my neighbor. That's the way I feel about my art. I don't want you to not be able to get in,
I just want you to get frustrated and give up and go on to another piece of art.
And then, that doesn't sound like it's good, though, working for me necessarily. The bars on a bank are there to keep the honest people more, even more honest by making them feel guilty, as if the bars are there for them. And then they will internalize that guilt, and they will go home thinking, I am a thief at heart, I am a thief at heart, I cannot be trusted, I cannot be trusted. Every time I go through security at the airport, I think, I cannot be trusted. Perhaps I am some sort of threat. Perhaps I'm being frisked and looked at because there's all probability that I could have something on me that's dangerous. Maybe I'm a killer and don't know it. These people are looking at me and they seem to think that there is a distinct possibility I could be dangerous. And so who's to say they're wrong? If the world sees me that way, maybe there's a little bit to that. It's not how I see myself, but I've surprised myself before. Say, I'm doing something I thought I would never do. Eating a Waldorf salad. I have nothing against Waldorf salads necessarily. My grandmother would make them for my grandfather, and I was exempt from this. I was asked to eat all the food that was presented to me as a young man, except for two things, Waldorf salad and liver. And I was happy with that exemption. And the other things I had to eat, which were like some of them, there was a thing that my grandmother made, and I've said this before, I've got to say it again because pain is best shared, and it was ground ham. So she'd make ham, and then the next day she had a meat grinder and a meat grinder monkey who would go around collecting Mondays while she'd grind ham. She'd make this, and then she'd grind it up, right? Grind this ham and put it on egg noodles and season it with soy sauce. And I always thought that this was horrible. You know, why are we eating this? This is my Irish grandmother, bless her heart, person of Irish descent. She was not a national. She was born in Philadelphia, like they all are. But she would make this for me, and she'd make Waldorf salad. And years later, I thought, I'm going to try a Waldorf salad. And there I sat, sticking my fork into mayonnaise and nuts and apples, purporting to be a salad and named for a hotel. And I still didn't like it. I thought, what an odd combination of flavors. This is not for me. And it expands the definition of salad beyond what I'm comfortable with. I will even acknowledge that coleslaw is perhaps a salad. But nuts and mayonnaise? No, sir. That for me. So if that's what you feel when you hear a bad pop song, I feel you a little bit. But I don't share with you that exact feeling. My friends, say, what are you saying to me, Hardy? Why are we speaking? I haven't heard a word you've said, and I apologize for that. Perhaps I haven't been listening closely enough. But it's good, because I'm not defining you. I'm not telling you who you are. You can, but you're figuring out who you are a little bit by listening to my words. How is that possible? Sonar. Things bounce off you. That's the way you hear. They go into you regardless. They all go into you and then they bounce off of you, like sonar. That's how sonar works. Pardon me. A bat will send out a very high-pitched sound. Meep, meep, meep. Beep, 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 beep. That is the shemp bat. All right, I don't know if you know about these. Have you seen these? And they're called that because they've got this sort of forelock on each side, right? That kind of frames their face, this kind of long hair that's hanging down. And they make that sound. They go beep, 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 and they do look a little bit like shemp. And they make that the signature beep, 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 shemp sound. But what they do is they bounce that beep, 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 it bounces off of something, like let's say Mo. And Mo is in the goat from which they make mohair. Not the real Mo. All animals have stooge components. There's birds, tropical birds that look like Larry.
So this bat will send out the sonar signal, bounce it off, and it will give them a picture using sound instead of light. That's what we do with light. Light bounces off things and say, oh, I can see how much light is coming from that. I can use that to form a picture of that object in space. That's what bats do with sound. They form a picture of an object in space by bouncing something off of it. Everything that you know about yourself is bounced off of other people. So even if it doesn't come from other people, it bounces off of them.
I am mayonnaise. You are glue. Whatever sort of salad concoction you try to make, I bounce off of you. Is that Dolomite? Or did I make that one up? I don't know. Oh, gosh, I hope I don't steal other people's jokes. I'm sure I do. I know I steal other people's short stories. I say, I'm going to take that short story and just make, I'll take the bug and make it a table or something like that. I go, all right, that sounds reasonable. Now it's mine. Zoop, yoink. So I know I probably do that. I absorb everything and I get inspired by it. I go to a museum and I see a painting by a painter and I go home and I try to do that painting or something in that style. And it comes out wholly other, because I can't make a copy of that very well, but it has inspired me. But I end up making my own thing. And we do that with art all the time. So I'm writing this original song. Come on, it's based on something. You've got something in your head. You first heard a song. You know how a song goes together. You're basing it on something. It's disingenuous to say, oh, I made that up out of whole cloth. You know you didn't. Everything is in there. The language, the things I think are the cadence of poetry I'm stealing. I'm stealing those rhythms all the time, all the time. Bo Diddley said, I made up gunk, junk, 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 junk. Whoa, my word. I know that everybody who heard junk, 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 junk went on to do that. It's hard not to. Right? It gets into you because you were in it. Oh, my friends, this time that we are together, I cherish. Any time that human beings can connect in a positive way and with love radiating like a wonderful heat, what do you put on the love radiator? Your socks. Your socks are so needy. That's all right. Bless them and bless you. Who is responsible for this? Well, you're listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York and Rockland County, New York, and online worldwide, WFMU.org on the internet. And you can hear this show and many others. Is it a show that you're doing? I don't even know. This visit, and you can visit with other people. Some of the other people will play records. And all, they don't call them all records, but they'll play music. They'll go, I'm done talking now. Because they're not as self-absorbed as I am. And but boy, I have soaked up that marinade, and now I just want to share it with you. I put a little oil and liquid smoke in that tempeh, and I've made some vegan bacon. And I hope I'm putting it out there so no animal was killed in the manufacture of this audio sandwich. I'm happy to say that. And I'm blessed to be with you. And I wish you a wonderful, healthy week. All the love in the world. I hope that you get through your troubles and that your struggles are few. And I will see you again next week.